Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning to colleagues and greetings to the delegation in Hong Kong. I will turn immediately to issue number 25, which also deals with freedom of assembly. Regarding the demonstrations of 2019 to 2020, both the reply and in your answers last Friday, it was asserted that the police were acting to preserve order in the face of violent crowds. Allow me first to note very briefly that the jurisprudence under Article 21 of the Covenant establishes that violence by some cannot taint an entire assembly. In policing an assembly, law enforcement should strive to de-escalate as far as possible, and for an assembly to lose its protection, violence must be widespread. However, despite the official narrative, it has been credibly documented that the response of the Hong Kong police force to the public assemblies was, as described by one international NGO, reckless and indiscriminate. These assessments are based on live video footage and personal accounts of what transpired. Common complaints involve incidents such as excessive and indiscriminate use of force against unarmed protesters, including kicking them, beating them with batons, even on their heads, tackling persons to the ground, including pregnant women. The indiscriminate use of less lethal weapons, the use of contaminated water in water cannons, intimidatory tactics such as mass arrests, strip searches, and even sexual assaults, and the denial of access to medical treatment of persons arrested and detained. In light of these reports, if, as it is claimed, no deaths were caused by law enforcement, as you said on Friday, what accounts for the so-called suicides that occurred during these protests? Have any of those so-called suicides been investigated? And if so, please indicate where the results can be found. What medical facilities were made available for persons arrested and detained? And where is such information available for verification? Kindly explain why, out of more than 2,000 complaints lodged against the police in relation to these protests, only a fraction has been reviewed to date. Does the Hong Kong government intend to address the remainder, and is there a timeline for doing so? Were any individual police officers found liable for having caused injuries in the context of these assemblies? And if so, how many? If no criminal charges were brought, was any police subject to disciplinary action? Was the use of force by law enforcement recorded promptly in a transparent report, as required under the Covenant and explained in General Comment 37? If so, are those records publicly and transparently available? Given the claims that it was the protesters who were violent, please provide us with the statistics of the number of persons who were arrested, charged and convicted in respect of the 2019 protests, and kindly describe the acts for which they were convicted. Where trials have not been concluded, are those defendants on bail? How many cases are pending? A recent court trial revealed that while dispersing crowds with tear gas on 18th of November 2019, the police provoked a stampede, in the course of which many people fell on top of each other, many were hospitalized, including some who were unconscious. In light of these and other allegations, against your assertion that the police were accountable for the use of force, please advise whether the Hong Kong government will conduct a commission of inquiry into the entirety of what occurred in 2019 and 2020 to ascertain what happened and ensure accountability for the excessive use of force. And finally, on this issue, will the Hong Kong government conduct training of law enforcement in order to enhance their capacity to manage and control large-scale assemblies? I turn now to issue number 27, which deals with political participation. Following the last periodic review, the committee asked about the timeline for introducing universal suffrage in line with your obligations under Article 25 of the Covenant. Since then, instead of progress towards implementation, the rights of residents of Hong Kong have gone in the opposite direction. Some of the key changes involve, first of all, Of the Lekko's 90 seats, only 20 are elected directly by eligible voters. The remainder are chosen by special constituencies, with the election committee choosing double that number of 40 legislators. In other words, while the 1,500-member election committee elects 40 legislators, 4.5 million eligible voters in Hong Kong only choose half of that. Second, the election committee is instrumental in choosing the legislators, but it is not a representative body. Its membership is determined by special interests, who are all closely aligned to the Central People's Government. Third, even this reduced number of 20 seats is not freely chosen because of a new nomination threshold that requires nominations by at least two members from each of the five sectors of the Elections Committee, and partly because candidates have to be pre-screened by the Candidate Eligibility Review Commission, which can and has disqualified candidates for election. Fourth, the general public has no say in the election of the chief executive, despite provisions of the basic law which say otherwise. Rather, the chief executive is selected by the elections committee and then formally appointed by central government. The bottom line is that 4.5 million voters in Hong Kong can elect only 20 out of 90 legislators. The remainder, along with the chief executive, are chosen by a tiny, unrepresentative body which is dominated by special interests and is appointed by the government. This situation is completely irreconcilable with the requirements of Article 25 of the Covenant and the right of persons thereunder to vote and stand for elections. In light of these provisions, please indicate when universal suffrage will be introduced to ensure that the millions of Hong Kong residents are no longer disenfranchised and are able to vote and stand for elections to both the chief executive and the Lekko without unreasonable limitations. Please tell us what exactly is the obstacle to fulfilling one of the most fundamental rights in the Covenant of voting and participating in political life. Second, regarding the disqualification of candidates and legislators, please clarify the requirement that public officials must take their oath sincerely and solemnly, which is an open-ended standard that confers enormous discretion on the Commission. Please justify how the previous disqualifications of electors for their peaceful political beliefs is compatible with the Covenant, which guarantees both the right to political participation and the right to non-discrimination on the ground of political beliefs. Finally, please inform the committee whether the Hong Kong government intends to respect the letter and spirit of the Basic Law, which is meant to ensure the autonomy of Hong Kong and allow its residents to govern themselves, as reflected in Articles 18, 45, and the principle of non-interference in Article 22. Thank you very much to the delegation, and I look forward to your replies. Thank you.